Now, this you have to know, but it's not as important. What they did in the fourth, everybody has maybe the fourth, fifth, sixth, you probably have the third, but they created a new chapter, and they called Stock Price Behavior and Market Efficiency. What they should have called it, I think, is Can You Beat the Market? And you hear quite a bit of this discussed in the financial media today, because there are people who absolutely believe that you can't beat the market and you should just stick with index funds and don't believe a word they say because they're wrong, in my humble opinion. And the statistics bear it out. People haven't really changed. Technology has changed, but people have not changed. You ever hear of Sir Isaac Newton? Remember the apple, gravity, that guy? Yeah. First law of thermodynamics. Things in motion tend to stay in motion. I can calculate the movement of the stars, but not the madness of men. And Sir Isaac Newton knew of what he spoke. He got caught up in one of the financial picadillos of the time. He invested heavily in, what was it called? Oh, darn. The South Seas Project. The South Seas Project, which was the Enron of the time, and the Kodak, the spectacular flame out that everybody was going to get rich off of and just turned into random walks, efficient markets. In the late 1960s, early 1970s, there was a movement among academics to try to measure how well market professionals, money managers and the like, were doing. And they found that most of them did not do very well in the short term. In the short term, they showed that stock price movements are unpredictable. And I agree with them. But in the long term, they are not. At least they have not been over the last 200 years since the Industrial Revolution. And we certainly hope that they're not. You know the analogy of the person walking up the stairs with the yo-yo? Yeah, it bounces up and down, but the economy is improving globally. People are better fed, better clothed, better sheltered. Well, they came up with a theory that says, no, you cannot predict the market, even over the long term. Nobody can beat it. It's a market in which, if it's an inefficient market, which is a market where securities reflect all possible information quickly and accurately, if there are large numbers of knowledgeable investors who react quickly to new information, then security prices will adjust quickly and accurately. In other words, do you have enough buyers? Do you have enough sellers? Then that's an efficient market. And a book by the name of A Random Walk Down Wall Street, I've quoted it before, I'll quote it again. He was one of the professors, he's still alive, and he actually worked for Vanguard for some time, or he's on the board or something. He does a very good job of describing what the academics did. And he also does a great job of skewering them himself, and he skewers the fundamental analysis, and he skewers the technical analysis. He's kind of like me, he insults everybody. And at the time, in the 1970s, the physicists were creating these weak theories and strong theories and semi-strong theories. So the academics in this world stole from them. The first one is called the weak efficiency hypothesis. Past data on stock prices are of no use in predicting stock future prices. However, stock prices do tend to demonstrate momentum. You know, they tend to rise more often than they fall, and they tend to move far higher than is usually justified, into a bubble, into a mania, or far lower than is usually warranted, a crash. There is a very famous story of a group of traders, speculators, who had seen the market skyrocket. In the 1950s, the market did really, really well. Stock markets was coming out of World War II, out of the Depression. And they were sure the market was overvalued. So they were betting it would go down. They were shorting stocks. And we'll discuss those in detail later on. In other words, you're betting the price that goes down. If the price goes up, you get hammered. It's like standing in front of a freight train. It just wipes you out. And so they were complaining to Sir John Maynard Keynes, who was generally regarded as the economist that helped us get out of the Great Depression, and said, you know, this market is irrational. We how could it stay this high for so long? And he said, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. And so this is a very famous quote, and it is so true. If you think prices are too low, watch them go lower. You might be right over the next 5 to 10 years, but over the next 3 to 4 weeks or 4 to 5 months or a year or two, you could lose a ton of money. If you think the market is too high, watch it go higher. It was 1996 that you heard the term irrational exuberance for stock prices from Alan Greenspan. And people jumped on that phrase, irrational exuberance, and still use it today. But the market went up higher in 97, 98, 99, and people finally said, oh no, it can't go down, 2000, 2001, 2002. So if this theory is true, and I agree with this one, then technical analysis, which we're going to cover in the next chapter, is basically useless, and I agree. Technical analysis, watching squiggles on a line, trying to determine what's going to happen next, I think is useless. The semi-strong efficiency hypothesis, where abnormally large profits cannot be consistently earned using publicly available information. What does this mean? No amount of analysis that you do to determine the future price of a stock will help you beat the market. In other words, all the stuff we did in chapter 6 and 17 is useless. Don't bother. The problem with this theory is that there are many, many investors who have beaten the market. Yes.
Kramer and all those guys.
Well, I don't know about Kramer.
What I mean, though. There's guys that, you know, they get a better price than we do by the time.
Well, now you're talking about something else. Front running or insider trading or something like that.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about people who have done well over significant periods of time. And I don't know what Mr. Kramer's long-term results are. I don't know if he publishes them. Maybe he does. But have you heard of Peter Lynch? We'll discuss Mr. Lynch. You've heard of Warren Buffett. You might have heard of PrimeCap, which is not owned, but they work with Vanguard. Dodge & Cox, T. Rowe Price, American Funds. There are companies, Will Danoff of Fidelity Contra Fund. There are individuals and companies that have beaten the market over long periods of time. And so what do the academics say? I mean, here's something that flies in the face of their theory. What they say is, oh, those people are just lucky. And you say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. And lucky? Oh, yeah. If you took 1 million people and then they all rolled the dice and just picked stocks, you know, one of them would do really, really well. The problem with that is the number of individuals who have done well is far greater than a random sample of how many people would do that well. There's a famous quote, and it's attributed to many different golfers, but if you look it up, you'll see. So I don't know who said it. But one golfer went out there, and he beat all the other golfers and did really, really well. And the reporter said to him afterwards, you know, you were really lucky out there. And he said, you're absolutely right. The funny thing is, the more I practice, the luckier I get. You with me? And I hear students say the same. You know, the more I study, the tests get easier. Okay. And so I don't necessarily like to use this analogy, but I can never forget getting into a batting cage. A buddy of mine got me to do it, I don't know, how many years ago? And it was set for 60 miles an hour, which I think was the max at the time. But now my understanding is you can go into those batting cages and they'll set it to 70. 70 is the most they'll do for the general public. And watching that ball go by and say, I'm getting the hell out of this cage. Ain't no way I'm going to try to hit that ball. And how fast do the majors throw? 95. Some can throw 100. So if you can hit a fastball at 95 miles an hour, you ain't lucky, folks, right? You're going to make several million dollars. Can you throw a fastball at 90 miles an hour, 95 miles an hour? I can sing. Anybody can sing. I can't sing as well as Pavarotti, right? It is an old African saying. If you can walk, you can dance. If you can talk, you can sing. Yeah, it doesn't say how well. So these people practice and are good at what they do and have been able to beat the market over long term. And they will tell you it ain't easy. And I will tell you. I've already told you it isn't easy, right? But you don't have to beat the market to do well. That's another thing. Warren Buffett had a great quote. I can't find it. It must not have been written down. But he said, forget about the market. Forget about trying to beat the S&P 500. Go out and buy a company. Right? Be proud of the company you buy. Now, I like this one. The strong efficiency hypothesis. No information. This is patently absurd, right? No information, public or private, allow investors to earn abnormally large profits consistently. Wait a minute. One insider information trade can make you rich instantly, overnight. If you knew a company was that Heinz was going to buy Kraft, right? If you knew a drug company was going to have their drug approved or disapproved, overnight you could become instant millionaire. Or you could go to jail because it's not legal. It's called material non-public information. Now, we call it insider trading, insider information. But the legal term is material non-public information. Can you trade on material non-public information? Say no. No. If you do, you could wind up going to jail. Now, it's interesting. There have been some exceptions. One guy overheard at a golf something or other, golf resort, a CEO talking to somebody else about something bad that was going to happen to his company. And he happened to just overhear it. That was okay. Because it wasn't given to him. But what often happens, and we know it happens, and there are some people who argue that it should be legal. That's like arguing that murder should be legal because sometimes people get away with it. But what will happen is somebody will get a phone call. Chuck, you know this is it, right? Don't say anything. Just listen. Buy our stock tomorrow. Buy it. Good night. The Securities and Exchange Commission has these programs that go in and try to find, you know, unusual trading patterns. All of a sudden you didn't buy a biotech company for 30 years and now you all of a sudden buy options in a biotech company. The next day jumps up. They try to catch you. But we know people get away with it. Questions, thoughts? Yeah, okay. So don't do it, all right? Don't do it. Don't want to go to jail. The random walk and efficient market theorists are also often proponents of index funds. They point to the fact that many professional money managers simply do not beat the index, especially during bull markets. They tend to do better during bear markets. From 63 to 98, the S&P 500 index outperformed general equity funds 22 out of 36 times. So that's, you would think it would be half times, but no, it's 22 out of 36. They reason that you are better off accepting close to the market's return. Remember, you're not going to get the market because there's always going to be some fees. Hopefully they're low, unless they snuck it into your 401k. They reason it's better off accepting close to the market's return with low-cost index funds, since their theory tells them that no one can consistently beat the market. But we know that that's not true. Why can't many pros beat the averages? Well, go back to Chapter 4. Remember we saw some mutual funds that had pretty high operating expenses? If you have a 2% operating expense, you've got to beat the market by 2% just to break even. So you got one hand tied behind your back already. The other problem is if you don't do well, this is changing. The culture of mutual funds are changing. But if you don't do well within 18 months, 2 months, 3, I'm sorry, 18 months, 2 years, 3 months, you're out the door. So if you want to keep your job, you're going to roll the dice. You're going to be more aggressive than you normally would. Less prudent, because you know that if you win, great, you get to stay. If you don't win, well, you're going to get kicked out anyway. But that culture is changing at mutual funds. That is changing. They are giving their mutual fund managers more time, more latitude to not necessarily beat the boogeyman, beat the S&P 500. But the premises and the casual observations of the efficient market theorists show them to be patently absurd. You know what that means? Fuchi kaka. Stupid. It reminds me of the bumblebee. For decades, very quickly, the aeronautical engineers understood flight. They understood what you needed to do to get off the ground. But there was one thing that bugged them. A bumblebee should not be able to fly. They were too big for their wingspan. Something wasn't right. And it wasn't until the 1990s, almost 80 years after they figured out flight, that they figured out how the bumblebee was doing it. Wasn't it good that they didn't tell the bumblebee? You're not supposed to be able to fly. Okay. Many mutual fund managers have beaten the markets over long periods of time. The more I practice, the better I get. Plus, if markets are efficient and rational, how do you explain manias? How do you explain bubbles? Are we rational individuals? We like to think we are, but everyone should say no. Are we rational individuals?
No.
Hell no. Everyone say no. Wait till I ask you. Are we rational? No. We in here are because we're taking Business 123, but even still. Investors get caught up in what are called manias, bubbles. The internet bubble of the 1990s was the latest stock mania, folks. And some of you were very young, but oh my Lord, I can remember just people saying the most stupidest things, and I'm saying, we're going to have a down year. And they looked at me like, you're nuts. Look at the history. We're going to have it down. I don't know what it's going to be. I didn't think it was going to be on 2003 or 4 or something with 2000. I thought I was going to wait until at least after the election. Before that, there was the Nifty 50 of the early 1970s. These were companies, because the stock market had done really, really, really well. Finally, people were forgetting about the Great Depression, 50s and 60s, go-go years, electronics, earth burners. And these were companies that you didn't have to worry about how high the valuation was. There was no way they were going to go down. You ever hear of Calcom or Tektronix? No, you've never heard of those because I think Tektronix is still around. Metro Media? No, you haven't heard of them either. No. How about Avon? Yeah, Avon has never recovered to where its price was. Xerox, right? Polaroid. Yeah, there's a problem. I would not want to, I told you this, right? Don't buy a company whose name rhymes with hemorrhoid. That's not a good sign. Yes?
Can you go back one? So the random walk and efficient theorists point to the fact that you cannot consistently...
That's what they believe, George. They believe that you can't beat the market over the long term. But there are people who have done it. Handily. Consistently. Does that make you sense? Okay. Now, the 1920s, what was the internet? What was the new technology of the 1920s? Television wasn't here yet. Radio, and automobiles, and RCA, Radio Corporation of America, hit $290-some a share in 1929, and 4 years later it was $2 a share. Never recovered from that. You see, people get greedy. They get greedy. In the 1840s, there were 400 railroad firms. How many railroad firms are there now? Yeah, less than a handful. There's a few, but not that many. But the granddaddy of all manias, and you're not going to believe me, was the Dutch tulip bulb craze of the early 1600s. Yes, tulip bulbs. See, tulip bulbs came from Turkey, I think. They came from Turkey, and they made their way to the Netherlands, and they became an instant success. And tulip bulbs traded like stocks. To the point where one tulip bulb at the height of the mania would sell for what today would be $1.5 million. One poor unfortunate person who just came to town, the sailor didn't know what was doing, he ate one. Thought it was an onion. Okay. What happens when you put a tulip in the ground? What happens when you put a tulip in the ground? It grows and it does what most living things try to do, and that's... Well, it's not die. They don't try to die. Eventually, they die. They reproduce. So how long was this going to last? Not that long. And so you know you don't believe me, but you definitely need to read either one or both of these books, The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and The Madness of Crowds, because it goes through the past insanity that has gone on with humans. and the South Seas Project, the Louisiana Project, witchcraft, the fact that we believed that people were witches, the Crusades, and the Dutch tulip bulb craze, and also the botany of desire. And each time you would hear people say this, it's a new era. It's different this time. The old ways of valuing stock are gone. And each time they were wrong. Are you with me? You're giving me the 3-minute warning, the 2-minute warning. Now, let me give you one more. Why do manias occur over and over again, dear students? Why haven't investors learned their lessons? Yeah, right. This is Leonard Kaplan. Market manias will happen over and over again because the public is infinitely stupid. We're dumb, you know. We just put our blinders on, and here's how Benjamin Graham says it. Okay, and then I'll let you go. Here's how Benjamin Graham in The Intelligent Investor says it. The speculative public. Notice he says the speculative public. People who buy and sell, think they can, you know, buy high, sell higher. It will buy anything at any price if there seems to be some action in progress. It will fall for any company identified with franchising, computers, electronics, science, technology. This was 1972, or what have you, when the particular fashion is raging. The abuses are so largely the result of the public's own heedlessness and greed. Hang on a minute, Orlando, give me a couple more minutes. Orlando, stop. Just give me a couple of seconds. Let me finish this. The abuses are so largely the result of the public's own heedlessness and greed. This was his last edition. He died in 1975. But this is the one you want to read. But you won't see this one. You'll see 2004, something like that, or maybe 2011. It's this edition, but then there are commentaries that you want to take a look at that were written by some guy who brings it up to date. If you had replaced franchising computers with internet biotechnology in 2000, right? And then now, what are the buzzwords? Social networking, wearables, and marijuana. Which is now, stocks have gone up 1,000%. All right, so study, folks, because I want you to be awesome investors. We come back, we'll continue with chapter 7, chapter 8, then we'll have exam number 3. Study chapters 5, 6, 17, 7, and 8. If you want to do, stick around because George is going to stick around. We're going to do a couple, I'll just leave this on. We're going to do a couple of the projects, problems from chapter 6. Okay, Orlando, I think I have something for you, or did I give it to you already?
I don't know. How does the bubble reply?
They figured out that they were compensating their size. I forget exactly how they did it, but they were did you get any handout?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, I'll get you. Orlando. They were compensating. Look it up, because I don't remember. They were doing something that compensated for their size. They were kind of pushing themselves at the same time they were propelling themselves. Kenny is here. Kyle, Christina. That's okay. I trust you, Marco. I trust you. Elizabeth Galarza, yes. Vicky, no. Jerry's gone. Raul. Yvette, yes. David Martinez, yes. Desiree, yes. Steve, no. Orlando, yes. Daniel Rendell, yes. Miguel, no. Martinique, no. I got you.
Okay.
Isaiah, okay.
Do you know where the mailbox is for professors?
470K. 470K. It's over that way. That way, yeah. You have to cross over past the, but it's also stay to the left. Don't go past the Chavez, but it's to the left. So go towards the Chavez and then turn to your left and then up the little hill. Okay, so Betsy, you want to do a couple of chapter 6 problems? Yeah, Elizabeth? Okay. I don't remember. You did well on the calculations, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, good. 20. The calculations were 20. Yeah, no, you did well. Yeah, okay. Okay, now. What? It was 64, actually. I dropped two. But because one of the questions was really bad, but 64, and the spreadsheet is gone. I apologize. But if you send me an email, I will shoot you your scores. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, let me write this down so I don't forget. Slide 10.
Greg, I have a quick question.
Sure, quick question.
I know how to do them, but I just didn't have the present value sheet.
We're going to do them right now. Do you want to stick around?
I'm pretty sure. I just want to know. You start, so it's 1, 2, 3.
Exactly.
You move up,
exactly.
Not the other way around, right?
No, you start at the top.
Okay.
Year number one, year number two.
Okay. Like this,
divide that by 64. Divide that number by 64, right?
And what is present value of expected price of stuff?
In other words, this one, we expect the price to be $12.
That would be that one, and this one would be 64.
64. You add that to the third one.
Okay.
But this one we're only doing 1 year, the third year.
And we only add it to the third one, not the overall. It's the same thing. We're saying, you know, right?
Exactly, because we're not getting any dividends, so we just use the expected price of the stock.
That's pretty confident.
Okay, good.
Just take out my value.
So that's Tuesday, April. Next time we will see each other is April 7th. And we were at slide number 10. Okay, excellent. All right, so now let's take a look at the worksheet. So what we're going to do, which one do you want to do? Which worksheet do you want to do? You want to do the exam? You want to do the worksheet? What do you want? You want to do the exam? Okay. The problem is I can't get the exam up on the screen. But I can get the present value table up on the screen. I'll do the worksheet number two. Okay, let's do the worksheet number two. And then, let's get the present value table up on the screen. Okay, get rid of that guy. Okay. So now, worksheet number two, we're going to do Yum Brands. All right? Okay, it's on the next page. We're going to do one of the discounted cash flow state problems. Okay. So Yum Brands. Okay, Orlando and Ricardo. Orlando, Ricardo. Talk outside. Okay, because we're going to do this. Okay, stick around. Yum Brands, that's the company that owns Kentucky Fried Rat and Pizza Crap and Taco Hell. Have you heard of them? Yeah, me too. Okay, I smell them, too. They're currently selling for $77.50. That's what Mr. Market is offering, the price. And here are the dividends for the next 3 years. At least this is what we believe they're going to be. So what we do is we write down the years. Year 2015, year 2016, and year 2017. All right? Okay. Now, what are the future cash flows? If we pay these people $77.50, what are they going to give us back? Well, right now they're paying $1.64 in dividends. At least that's what they're doing right now. Any quarter, they can stop paying dividends. They don't have to pay us dividends. But they've been paying dividends and they've been growing their dividends smartly over the last several years. So we believe next year, or Value Line tells us, or some other service tells us, that they're going to increase their dividends to $1.70. You see that?
That's a penny. Oh, sorry.
No, we're in 216. You're right. We're in 216. Are you on the right page?
Looking for that sheet, though.
Don't, just ask for one. You always have this look on your face. I'm going, what is he looking for now? Just ask, and I will give you one. You see, Betsy? Okay, come on up and get it. Here you go. Whoops, wrong one. That's the right one. Okay, hang on. Oh, you want the worksheet. Okay, give him that. Give him that. Don't worry, we'll get this right. Okay. Worksheet number two. Here you go. Okay, so now, in the third year, Isaiah, what's our dividend expected? $1.76. Do we guarantee get $1.76?
No.
Hell no. And Value Line or we forecast the price to be approximately $105 at the end of 2017. Right? So we can use that expected price as a cash flow. We can think of it as a cash flow. You see, the book, I think, does a disservice in describing the dividend discount model as just dividends when they originally showed it to you. And what I'm thinking of doing is just taking that out of the presentation because I think it confuses people more than it does help them. But we look at the, because the example they do is they show a company that has three dividends of $100 and then promptly disappears. I mean, how many companies do that? Hopefully not too many. So now what we need to do is we need, this is the verb we use, we need to discount these future cash flows. How much is it worth to us today? And what we do is we use the present value multipliers. That's the table you were talking about. So everybody got the table? Yeah. Well, what are we looking for? 11%. Are you with me?
And I got 0.901.
What's year number two?
And then number two, I got
0.812, and year number three?
And should be, I think I got the last one wrong. That's why my answer.
Well, what does it say on the, look here. Look what it says here.
0.731.
Right. We're going to 106.76. Because we're going to get the dividend, we expect to get the dividend, and we expect the price to be $105.
Okay.
Ricardo?
I'm
sorry?
The
yeah, because we're not selling the stock in these years. We're going to hold on to it. We're thinking 3 years into the future. Always thinking 3, 4, 5 years into the future.
The formula says expected price of stock times
PBM. Exactly. So now what do we do? George, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Now what we do is we multiply each of these future cash flows by the present value multiplier. We say, okay, what is $1.64 worth to us today? At 11%, $1.64 times 0.909 equals 1.477? Yeah? Okay. The second one, $1.70 times 0.81. What is $1.70 worth to us that we're going to get 2 years from now? Worth to us today? 1.38? Close enough. And then $106.76 times 0.731. So it should be like $77. $78.04. So we, you didn't add the $105, yeah. That's okay, that's all right.
Just,
no, you add the 176 and the 105 first. Then multiply this number. Well, you could multiply 1.76 times 0.71, 105 times 0.71, that's more work.
Okay.
Add these together first, and then do the multiplication. And also, that's what, if you go look at the spreadsheet on the website, a couple of spreadsheets that show you how to do this using the spreadsheet, and that's a whole lot easier, right? The spreadsheet calculates everything for you.
So then, I have another question for the homework. Where we have to look up the stocks and do...
You mean chapter 5?
Yeah, for the last...
Okay, your chapter 6, you're going to fix these, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And
But for the last homework assignment he gave us, this one,
right,
we have to go back and choose two of the formulas for each.
Choose. Well, I want you to do 12. So I want, but I want you to do two from each, at least two from each. So do 12.
Okay.
You could do them all, or do, you know, just do at least 12 and do two from each. Because the thing about these guys, these you can look up. In fact, you don't even need to compute these. Just look these up.
Okay.
But these I want you to compute. Not all of them. All
right.
But you got all the data. Just go to Yahoo, look at their balance sheet, or go to the company's website, download their annual report, and use theirs. Probably a better thing to do. I trust the company's website more than I trust Yahoo anymore.
Can you do one more?
Now let's do the, which one? The last one?
Number 5.
Want to do number 5? Okay, let's do number 5. Waste Management Corporation. You ever hear them? What do they do?
Trash.
Pick up the trash. That's a company I like. A company that's going to be around in 50 years. Now, right now, is it worth what people are paying for it? That's the question we have to ask. It turns out the stocks are pretty darn high these days, folks. Get ready. Okay, they're selling for $54.50, or at least they were a few weeks ago. I don't know what they're selling it for now. And they're paying $1.50 dividend. But we go back in time, or we take a look at Value Line, and we find that they've been raising their dividend at about 6%. Right?
Okay.
What if our expected rate of return is 10%, what do we believe Waste Management is worth? So the formula, I remember it. This is the constant perpetual. It's the annual dividends times 1 plus the growth rate divided by our required or expected rate of return minus the growth rate. Okay, and that's on your formula sheet. So what are the dividends? Right, $1.50 times. Now here's where you were taking 6%. What is 6%, George?
1.06.
That's right. 0.06. 1.06 when you add 1 to it. You were putting 1.6%. You were doing 60%. So you gotta be careful. You know, that's the kind of thing that'll just make you look bad. Like, oh, man. So 6% is 0.06. 1 plus 6% is 1.06. Good. 1.06. Now, what's our required rate of return? What's our required rate of return? 10%. What's the growth rate? So 0.1 minus 0.06, 0.10 minus 0.06 equals, and if you don't know how to do it in your calculator, 0.04. So multiply 1.5 times 1.06. $1.59 divided by 0.04 $39.75. But what's the market price? Market price is 54.5. Does that look like a good deal? Okay, multiply 1.5 times 1.06.
So it's not a
good deal. Well, according to the model, it's saying you're probably not going to get 10%. If you rerun it again with 8%, you see what it's saying? If you were to change it to 8%, then you might get it. You'll get a different number. So what the again? These are just tilting the odds in our favor. What the models are telling us that yeah, you're probably not going to get 8-10% from this thing. And I agree. Over the next 5 to 10 years, I think stocks are going to return 4, 5, 6%. But that's still better than bonds. Still better than what bonds are going to do. I think we'll see. Well, no, you know, that's why they know the future. Does that make sense, George?
Kind of, yeah. So if the rate of return is less than what is currently selling around,
then exactly. If what we believe that it's worth this much. Our model tells us it's worth about $40. But it's selling for 55 almost. So, it doesn't mean we shouldn't buy it. Maybe we think it's a good deal. Maybe we simply just reduce our expected rate of return to 6 or 8 or 7%. We just say, look, we're not going to, and that, I agree, is probably what's going to happen. Doesn't know necessarily. Okay, now, last one. George, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, Ricardo?
Value.
For that one. No, that's right.
That's right.
It was 6% though.
But didn't it start at 1.05?
Yeah, but it's growing at 6%. Oh no! It's been 5%. Who did? Why don't you guys?
Wait, wait, that's a different problem.
Oh, which problem are you doing? Oh, that's the homework problem. Okay. No, that's about right. That makes sense.
Starts from.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
But if just one from 1 year, it's going to grow
36%? No, what it's saying is that we believe that the price, that's what the stock should be worth. He's looking at the homework problem.
Okay.
And we've seen that they've been growing their dividend at 5%, and we're looking at 8%.
Okay.
So we believe, now the problem doesn't tell us how much it's worth.
Okay.
This problem doesn't say how much this is worth. So we don't know how to, he was looking at the homework problem. All right, the last one. You want to do the last one? Okay, exactly. In other words, how much is the market value of Waste Management? 54.5. What do we believe it's worth? 40, right? 39.7. Yeah, that's saying that yeah, you're not going to get the 10% you're looking for.
Oh, I thought it was like it dropped down, so it was a good time to buy.
No, if the market price had been that, and we believe it was that, that would be, yeah. That would then be exactly the opposite. No, the market price is higher than what we believe it.
Why do we believe it's 39.75?
Because the model tells us that if we have a $1.50 dividend and they've been growing those dividends at 6%, if our required rate of return is 10%, we would be willing to pay this amount. But it ain't selling for that amount. It's selling. Everyone else is paying 54.50. So other people, that rate of return for them might be 8% or 7%. So they're happy with that. And we're not. Well, maybe we just have to lower our expectations. Right? We might have to say, okay. And I think this is realistic for people because right now stocks are fairly richly valued. They may go a lot higher. They've done it in the past. But if you're thinking over the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to get 10% from stocks, I beg to differ. I don't think it's going to happen. In the 2000s, we got negative 1%. Between 2000 to 2000, January 1st, 2000 to December 31st, 2009, it was 0.95 negative, the S&P 500. Then, since the Great Depression, I'm sorry, the Great Recession, between 2009... and now we've been getting 14-15%. So you see, people swing from one extreme to the other extreme. And now I don't think we're at the extreme we were back in 2000. You know, then dividends were 1%. Now they're about 2%. Some PEs were outrageous. You know, the PEs of some, but some PEs for certain companies are, like Twitter and Facebook and Tesla and GoPro. But they're the few of the hot companies, They're the ones that Benjamin Graham said the speculative public is encouraging.
They're still not. I thought it was dead.
Well, I don't know. It's not making any money, so as far as I'm concerned, it's dead. But let's see what they say about Twitter.
It's been quiet.
It's been quiet recently.
Okay,
let's take a look at Twitter. No! Stop doing that! I don't want to add it. I want to quote. I mean, they made it. Oh no, it's T. What is Twitter?
So again,
there you are. TWTR.
If our calculated value is lower than our market value, it's a bad buy.
Exactly. If the calculated value is lower than the market value, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad value or a bad buy. What it means is that our model is telling us. And we remember, before we make a decision, we throw all these numbers away. Maybe we really do want to own waste management. We just have to realize that we're probably not going to get what we think we're going to get. But look at that. $32 billion on a company that's losing money and has never turned a profit. That scares the living daylights out of me. What? How are they going to make any money? What's their revenue stream? Let's take a look at their income statement. Obviously, some money's coming in the door. They made last year $1.4 billion. No, they brought in $1.4 billion of revenue. How much did they make? They lost $577 million. How long can that go on? At least the loss is getting less. Well, this year it was $80 million, and they lost $640 million, and they lost $577 million. I don't know. See, you're talking to the wrong guy. The last thing I want to do is play with Twitter and Facebook and K-Pasa and all these other. The last thing I want to do is turn on a computer to have fun. I turn on a computer to do work, and then I get my classes done, and I do my research, I do my lectures, and then I disappear from the computer. Make sense? Whereas other people spend the whole damn day in front of YouTube, spend the whole day in front of Facebook, tweet to their heart's content.
Instagram
lost. No, Instagram is owned by Facebook, right?
Is it?
Yeah, Instagram is owned by Facebook. Is that true? I heard an interview from the guy, one of the co-founders. The two co-founders had a bet. The one guy said they'd get 25,000 users the first day. The other guy said they'd get 25,000 users the first hour.
What?
They got 25,000 users.
Wait, after Facebook bought them?
No, when Instagram started.
Wow.
25,000 users in 1 hour, and nobody had ever heard of it yet? And he was right? I don't know how the hell he did it. I mean, how the hell? You didn't even know it existed.
Advertising.
Takes a while for advertising to work. You have to hit people with 4 or 5 or 6 messages before they even start to register. If it's something new. Okay, last one. Let's do the last one. Make sure we can do the last one. Right, George?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a real company, by the way, folks. BioLase Technology is currently selling for around $2 a share. Real big winner, huh? $2. $2.05. They lose money. They pay no dividends. But they have patents on teeth cleaning and whitening technologies. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. That should be popular and profitable in the future. The average of the analyst estimates for the stock next year is $3.50, and we estimate, or ValueLine, or somebody tells us, we believe the stock is going to be worth $6 in 5 years. Are you with me, George, or what am I doing? Am I talking to myself?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so now, if our required return is 14%, which I think is way too high, but some people want that, would we consider this to be a good buy? Well, if there are no dividends, what is the dividend worth to us?
Zero.
But we believe it's going to be worth $6 in 5 years at 14%. So what we do is we go across the 14% down to, 5 years? Yeah, 5 years. And what's the present value multiplier for 5 years at 14%? 0.519. Multiply $6 times 0.519 and about $3.11. So is that more or less than the market price, Ricardo? It's more. So the model is telling us, yeah, this is a good buy. But what do we know about a company like this? It's absolutely risky. It could be $6, it could be $60, or it could be 6 cents. Because it ain't a wealth management company. We don't know that somebody else might come along and come out with something a whole lot better. Or we don't know that all of a sudden the stuff that they have makes people's teeth fall out. And they're getting sued for $50 billion.
But that would be to use 3 years by the...
No, it's 5 years.
5 years.
But if you... I think the one that you're looking at, if you're looking at the assignment sheet, I think it's 3 years, right?
Yeah, but it would be just...
You would go across down, go and yeah, you go to this percentage and down the number of years. Because the only expected cash flow is what we can sell the stock for in 3 or 5 years. That's it. We're not going to get any dividends. Cool.
So is this just a chart that you made up, or is this a reality?
No, that's what that does. If you remember the very first presentation on dividend discounts. Hang on a minute.
Chapter 6.
Yeah, you probably missed that. Hang on a minute. Let's save it and open it up. Okay. Oops, that's not the one I want. There it is. Okay. If you remember that, come on. Okay. What we did is we took a look at, it's 18. All right, we took a look at the purest form of the dividend discount model, where the price at time zero is equal to the dividend for year number one divided by 1 plus K. Now, what's K? That's our required rate of return, 10%, 14%. And then the dividend in year number two divided by 1 plus K squared. The dividend in year number three, 1 plus K to the third, and so on and so forth. Well, those numbers are the numbers on the present value table where the dividend is 1. So all those D's are 1. So over here, we see that if you go across, they want 15%. If you go across the 15% down 1 year, that's 0.870. Well, take 1 divided by 1 plus 1.15, and you'll get 0.870. And then the second year, 1 divided by 1 plus 1.5 squared, the quantity squared, is 0.756. So the table just has those numbers built into it, so we don't have to do exponentiation. We just look at the table. But if we have a spreadsheet, let's go look at the spreadsheet. If we have a spreadsheet, which we do, so go play with the spreadsheets. Let's do Jimba Jamba Jamba Deuce. Save link as, and then open. We'll see that the spreadsheet has that formula. We don't have to type in these numbers. You see these guys right here? We don't have to type those numbers in because the spreadsheet, there's the formula. 1 divided by 1 plus the required rate of return to the first power. 1 plus, and go down 1. Hang on a minute. This will do page down. I don't want page down. There's 1 plus 1 divided by 1 plus the required rate of return squared to the third power. So the spreadsheet can do it lickety-split. We don't have to type in the numbers, but you could. But what we do have to type in is what we believe the cash flows are going to be. So if we were to do this problem right here, over there, I'm sorry, what was the first one? $1.64? Right? And then $1.70. And then $1.76 plus 105. What did I do? Oh, I forgot. I'm not used to Excel. I use the equals sign. And then we required 10% or 11? That was 11%, right?
11%. And you see, boom, boom, boom. Something not right. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's about right, yeah. So you see how you use the spreadsheet. And a lot of the online students will do that.
That's on your website?
That's on the website, yeah. A lot of the online students will turn in everything on using the spreadsheets. That's fine. Cool?
Cool.
All right, let's get out of here. Okay, do you want me to leave these things on the screen there, George, for a while? I mean, on the screen.
No, I'm good.
You're good? Okay. Okay, Betsy. Vas a estudiar esta semana? De qué bueno. ¿Cómo? I'm glad to hear that. I'm very proud of you. I think I'm out of them, but I'll check. Hang on a minute. Yes, I will. I'll see if I have any extras. If you come to my office, I'll print one out for you. But I think I'm out of them. There's the formula sheet. There's the value in large sheet number one. Oh, no, here you go. Here's the assignment. You're welcome, Isaiah. My pleasure.
Hey, have a happy vacation.
I will. You know what I'm going to do?
What are you going to do?
Nothing.
That sounds good.
My wife and I are going to go down to... tomorrow morning, we're going to the Otay Mesa border crossing. She's going to get her interview for her sentry pass.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, because I have one, and she doesn't.